Hello, and welcome to the August edition of the IHS Market Lithium Chemicals podcast. I'm Nick Kovics, the Service Director for the Lithium and Battery Materials Market Advisory Service. Today I'm joined by our global team based out of Houston, London, and now Beijing. There's a lot to cover today, so we're going to jump right into it, starting with Lukasz Bednarski from our London office, the macroeconomic view. Lukasz?
Thanks, Nick. We live in interesting times. The Japan-South Korea trade dispute, increasing in intensity over the last month, added to the global supply chain uncertainties already shaped by China-US dynamics. After Japan introduced individual purchase approvals for three key chemicals used in semiconductor production by South Korean major chip manufacturers, the government subsequently decided to remove South Korea from the white list of jurisdictions with adequate controls, preventing re-export of dual-use technologies to undesired territories. The removal from the white list further complicates base technology purchases for the South Korean high-tech sector, which is heavily reliant on Japanese suppliers. The South Korean government announced a plan for establishment of $6.4 billion to reduce the country's dependency on Japanese imports, while the nation's residents responded with a boycott of Japanese goods. South Korean battery manufacturers rely on battery components supply from Japan. LG Chem has been known to purchase cathode materials from Japan's Nichia Corporation, for example. The trade dispute is likely to influence Korean manufacturers' perception of supply risk and could impact business decisions, potentially slowing production if new suppliers must be qualified. The U.S. administration threatened to impose a new set of 10% tariffs on $300 billion worth of Chinese goods in September. As a countermeasure to keep exports competitive, China significantly devalued its currency. A weaker yuan typically hurts demand for commodities. It remains to be seen whether it will impact China's imports of spodumene concentrate and lithium carbonate. In Argentina, pro-market president Mauricio Macri came second to populist Peronist candidate Alberto Fernandez in primary voting, 32% to 48% of the vote, triggering a strong sell-off across countries' financial assets. Investors are worried that the large fall in currency value will further impact Argentina's ability to meet its USD-denominated debt obligations and increase already high inflation rate. Regarding Chile, market expects further interest rate cuts in September and a stronger GDP growth rate in the second half of the year.
Thanks, Lukasz. It was challenging enough trying to predict the next move in US-China trade negotiations. Adding Japan and Korea to the mix, well, those are pretty important producing regions from a battery perspective. Hopefully next month we're talking about de-escalation for a change. Well, let's move now on to Nell Agat-Choi, who's also in London, for an update on demand.
Yeah, sure. The month of July saw the development of several pre-existing but important battery-specific trends, including the unprecedented crunch in Chinese car sales, the continued rollout of grid-scale energy storage projects and legislature in Western markets, as well as a deterioration of trade relations between battery giants Japan and South Korea, all of which continue to shape the maturing landscape of the energy storage sector, key to lithium chemical demand. A relentless slump in light passenger vehicle sales in China year to date limits optimism for the automotive industry in the world's largest car market. Now, unusually for the Chinese market, this downward slide in sales has been consistent across almost all of China's provinces. Conversely, and as highlighted in our last month's report, changes to China's EV subsidies effective from the 26th of June are expected to eventually open up the Chinese battery market and increase competition. So EV sales in China remain resilient, though are still propped up by government policies, including subsidies and a production mandate for new energy vehicles. Despite this, growth in EV sales has not been enough to offset declines in ICE vehicle sales. Moving on to consumer electronics, so Samsung announced targets in line with a double-digit percentage growth in the sales of cylindrical batteries. The ongoing US-China trade dispute was cited as a factor for the slowdown in demand for small lithium-ion batteries used in electronics, but forecast adoption of the technology in larger devices, such as vacuum cleaners and bigger power tools, which all in all should remain robust according to their recent outlook. The company sees global demand for cylindrical batteries rising to 10 billion cells in 2025, from an estimated 5.5 billion cells this year. Monthly trade statistics from the Japanese Ministry of Finance as of May saw a series of changes relative to the previous April report. Japanese net exports of lithium-ion batteries to Europe decreased by 36.9% month on month, while trade to North America switched from modest net imports in April to net exports in May. So the swing in battery trade coincides with media reports regarding a combination of dropping costs and diversification of end-use applications that have in turn accelerated the uptake of grid utility storage in recent months. Of note, the $350 million incentive program from the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority that was finalized in June is poised to upgrade both large and small scale grid utility installations, which would also increase integrated energy storage capacity as well. Finally, it is worth noting, we have also increased our estimates for global lithium demand to approximately 355 kilotons LCE in 2019 from our previous estimate of 350 kilotons LCE. Global lithium chemicals consumption is expected to steadily increase over the forecast period, more than doubling the 2019 demand level to increase to approximately 794 kilotons LCE by 2025, compared to our previous estimate of 750 kilotons LCE. Changes within the industrial demand segment have been nominal, where only ceramic end-use applications for lithium chemicals is growing on both absolute and relative terms this year.
Thanks, Nell. That increased demand outlook should be good news for the producer who had to deal with oversupply issues recently. Well, now on to Priscilla Ho-Young, who's here with me in Houston, for more color on supply.
Thanks, Nick. This month was filled with news from producers as many reported quarterly results and provided updated forecasts. At the same time, converters struggled through construction, commissioning, and startup in their own projects due to changing subsidies in China. As a result, many converters requested that lithium producers delay shipments, find other customers, or renegotiate offtake agreements. Lithium prices continue to drift lower this month. However, lithium producers and juniors remained busy preparing for demand growth forecasts ahead in the next few years. IHS Markit predicts that perhaps this is why the biggest news this past month is Albemarle's revision to their lithium conversion strategy and joint venture with Mineral Resources. Albemarle revised its expansion strategy, reducing capital expenditures by approximately $1.5 billion over the next 5 years and becoming free cash flow positive by 2021. Albemarle is delaying all work associated with 125,000 metric tons of previously announced capacity additions. Expansion plans decreased by 25,000 metric tons for the Kemerton Lithium Hydroxide Phase 1 plant, with the next 50,000 metric ton expansion for Kemerton to be shared capacity between Albemarle and Mineral Resources. Albemarle and Mineral Resources revised their partnership in which Albemarle increased its stake in the Wodgina mine to 60%, and Mineral Resources now may hold a 40% stake in the lithium hydroxide refinery in Kemerton. Both companies have agreed to put their plans on hold to build a lithium hydroxide refinery in Wodgina in order to conserve capital. In additional news, Mineral Resources also dropped its Mount Marion spodumene concentrate, their 6% lithium oxide, price by 11%. Livent Corporation recently had their quarterly update, and they recently concluded that their debottlenecking project in its Argentina operations, which in order to debottleneck their Argentina operations, they had to produce less this past month. They are also continuing to work on lithium hydroxide capacities to meet demand. Both Livent and Albemarle stated that hydroxide growth remains strong, but is offset by slower than forecasted carbonate sales. The companies believe the challenge is price-based, with supply driving the prices down rather than demand. In Australia, Pilbara Minerals secured an additional offtake agreement with Great Wall Motors for Pilbara Stage 1 production. However, due to the chemical conversion delays that I had talked about above, some of its offtake partner sites, Pilbara Minerals decreased production and experienced lower sales in the past quarter. It will now stage their expansion plans to lower their initial capital expenditure required and to provide their customers time to ramp up matching production capabilities. At the end of the month, Sichuan Fulin Transportation Group Company dropped plans to build a battery parts plant in Chile following Molymet's similar mid-month termination announcement. Chilean development company agency Corfo announced that they received documentation from Fulin, Molymet, and POSCO stating that all three will not go forward with their battery parts plans in Chile. Overall, the lithium market continues to reassess and optimize their strategies in the soft market as they prepare for the growing electric vehicle demand, and as a result, the growing high nickel demand that will require lithium hydroxide. Back to you, Nick.
Thanks, Priscilla. Well, it definitely has been a busy month on the supplier side, as producers are shifting expansion plans further out, waiting forecast demand to materialize as we expect. So this normally would be the end of our podcast, but I want to briefly introduce our newest team member, Lily Wu, who's based out of our Beijing office. Lily's going to be focusing on China for our team, both from a production and conversion plant standpoint, as well as assisting us on a number of special projects we have underway for research. So Lily, tell us a little bit about yourself and really what drew you to IHS Market and the lithium sector.
Hi everyone, this is Lily Wu from IHS Market Beijing office. I'm very happy and excited to join IHS Market's global lithium team. As we all know that lithium market is a global market with participants from all over the world across the value chain. With IHS Markets global and integrated across industry resources and intelligence, I believe it is the best choice to work with IHS Markets in this sector while being physically in China. Prior to joining IHS Markets, I had a corporate advisory experience in mining and other sectors. While consulting, I noticed that there were increasing M&A cases during the past few years in lithium sector, most of which were China-based converter companies looking to acquire overseas lithium mines. In addition, my industrial friends in the mining sector were not exceptions looking into lithium only in the past few years. I then started looking into this market and were aware that lithium's demand will be extremely increasing in the future, mainly driven by the evolution of EV globally. After learning of the market potential, I started consulting as financial advisor of those overseas lithium mining companies to help them to find their China partners. Working primarily with converter companies in China, either by equity investment and or shipping the final products. Since the industry is mainly driven by EVs, I have researched mid and downstream sectors in this industry. More specifically, I focused on new energy battery materials producers, battery manufacturers, and EVs manufacturers and recyclers. The more I looked into the value chain, the more opportunities I discovered. And I believe with IHS Markets' global footprint and multi-industry expertise, we can bring new value to the sector.
Thanks for that, Lily. Our listeners will hear more from you in the coming months. So with that, this wraps up our podcast for months. So thanks for taking the time to listen to us today.